Vaccination basics. It is important to understand what vaccines are, what they are made up of, and how they work. As defined by the CDC, a vaccine is a preparation that is used to stimulate the body's immune response against diseases. Vaccines are a crucial, highly effective tool used to prevent the spread of certain viruses. Outbreaks of vaccine-preventable diseases have been well documented in healthcare facilities. Vaccine-preventable diseases likely to occur in LTC facilities are influenza, pneumococcal infection, herpes zoster, shingles, and pertussis, but vaccines are available for a wide range of other infections as well. Vaccination is the act of introducing a vaccine into the body to produce immunity to a specific disease. The terms vaccination and immunization, a process by which a person becomes protected against a disease through vaccination, are often used interchangeably. Key point: vaccines protect everyone involved in LTC facilities, residents, HCP, other staff, and visitors. Vaccines can be used to convey active immunity to a person. Active immunity occurs when a person is exposed to the organism by either vaccination or direct exposure. This creates an immune response memory in the person. So when the person encounters the organism in the future, the immune system will respond more quickly. This is distinct from passive immunity, which occurs when a person is given antibodies for a specific disease, resulting in immediate immunity. This may also be conveyed through administration of certain blood products. The vaccine itself may consist of live, usually attenuated or weakened, or inactivated, killed, microorganisms or fractions thereof. Live, attenuated vaccination uses small doses of the organism, producing a subclinical infection and triggering an immunological approach that is more like the response that follows natural infection. This may confer more long-lasting immunity than inactivated vaccines. Inactivated vaccines may consist of the whole microorganism, toxoids, modified bacterial toxins, detoxified exotoxins, soluble capsular material, surface antigens, or components of the organism. Vaccines for some diseases may be available in both live and inactivated compositions. The differences between live and inactivated vaccines help explain why a single dose of measles, mumps, and rubella, MMR, vaccine is thought to confirm lifelong immunity, even though two doses are now recommended, whereas repeated vaccination and boosters are required for other immunobiologics such as those for diphtheria and tetanus. Passive immunity is conferred by exogenous antibody administration. Sources of these antibodies include human immunoglobulin, specific immunoglobulin preparations, and antitoxins harvested from human blood plasma or the serum of immunized animals. Vaccines may be described by a few other terms that refer to the breadth of their intended coverage. Monovalent. A vaccine consisting of a single strain or type of organism. Bivalent. A SARS-CoV-2 vaccine consisting of two SARS-CoV-2 strains targeted to specific variants. Trivalent. A vaccine consisting of three types or strains of a single organism. Example, influenza vaccine, or three different organisms. Example, diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus vaccine. Quadrivalent. An influenza vaccine consisting of four influenza strains. Example, 2A virus strains, 2B virus strains, polyvalent. A vaccine consisting of multiple strains or types of organisms. Example, 23-valent pneumococcal vaccine. Vaccines may include components from several classes of substances and compounds. The four main classes of compounds and their uses are listed in Exhibit 2-18. Exhibit 2-18, Vaccine Components. Key point: in addition to a lack of understanding of the components of a vaccine, vaccine resistance may arise from a host of other factors. Understanding these factors and being able to offer counterpoints can assist the IP in their efforts to prevent disease transmission and negative effects in their facilities. Some of the reasons for resistance include adults viewing immunizations as kid stuff, difficulty in scheduling, perception that vaccines are unnecessary, confusion as to the purpose of vaccines. For example, not all vaccines entirely prevent infection. The goal may be to reduce illness severity following future infection, as with the COVID-19 vaccine. Fear of potential complications. Vaccine storage. Vaccines must be stored correctly in order to maintain their effectiveness and optimal immunity response. Not all vaccinations have the same storage and handling requirements. For example, some can be refrigerated while others require freezing. Different variations of vaccinations for the same disease may require different storage conditions, too. Different COVID-19 vaccinations have required different storage temperatures. Some vaccines, for example, certain influenza vaccines, should be protected from excess exposure to light. Healthcare personnel handling vaccines should therefore always check the manufacturer's instructions before storing vaccines to ensure that they are stored correctly. Relevant storage information should be printed on the label of each vaccination vial or container. The CDC recommends that vaccines be stored in dedicated, purpose-built, or pharmaceutical-grade units designed to refrigerate or freeze biologics. A vaccine storage and handling toolkit is available on their website. These units are available in a variety of sizes to suit each facility's needs. But a facility should install units that can accommodate the largest expected inventory, for example, to ensure that a long-term care facility can store enough influenza vaccine for all residents and staff during the annual flu season. Vaccines should be stored separately from other medications, and they should never be stored in the same refrigerator as food or beverages. It is also important that vaccines not be stored in a combined refrigerator/freezer unit under any circumstances. Limiting the number of times vaccine storage is accessed reduces the risk of accidental spills and contamination. The CDC recommends that HCP monitor vaccine storage temperatures at least twice daily. According to the CDC's The Epidemiology and Prevention of Vaccine-Preventable Diseases, facilities should establish standard operating procedures for handling and storing vaccines. These SOPs should include the following: general information, vaccine manufacturer contact information, equipment service providers, key stakeholder information, including contact details, regularly used forms, example, temperature logs, temperature excursion logs, vaccine information statements, staff training requirements, routine storage and handling, all vaccine inventory management processes, ordering, receiving, unpacking, storage, handling, disposal, and monitoring, emergency policies and procedures, steps to be taken in the event of equipment malfunctions, power failures, natural disasters, or other emergencies that might compromise vaccine storage conditions. Developing these SOPs is an important step in the infection prevention and control program, and the IP should be involved in the process. They should also incorporate vaccine storage and handling into relevant training and evaluation programs. Training. New employee orientation. Annual refresher course for HCP involved in administering vaccines, when new vaccines are added to the LTC facility's inventory, and when vaccine recommendations are updated. Evaluation. At least once annually, in addition to when new vaccines are added to the facility's inventory, and also when vaccine recommendations are updated. Misconceptions versus contraindications. Various reasons exist for vaccine hesitancy. People may be incorrectly concerned about getting the disease from a vaccine, for example, influenza or measles. In the case of influenza, because an inactivated vaccine contains only a killed virus, it is impossible to get the flu from the flu shot. People may be concerned about hypersensitivity reactions, viral replication, and efficacy and cost-benefit issues. As a result of their exposure to medical information, HCP in particular may have exaggerated fears regarding known adverse reactions or potential complications. There are also anti-vaccine groups that publish and distribute erroneous or misguided information. Side effects may be exaggerated. Yet because they have a basis in fact, even HCP can be influenced. Although there are some legitimate contraindications to immunization, there remains substantial confusion regarding the appropriate indications and exclusions for various vaccines. The following are common areas of misconceptions: previous local reaction or fever after tetanus, diphtheria, TD, vaccination, egg intolerance or allergy to feathers, penicillin or other nonspecific allergy, mild acute illness with low-grade fever, recent exposure to infectious disease, breastfeeding, unpleasant childhood memories of redness, soreness, or fever may prevent adults from seeking re-immunization. Local reactions and low-grade temperatures are associated with bacterial vaccines, such as the TD vaccine, but these side effects are usually transient. True hypersensitivity reactions are unusual. Potential vaccine allergens include animal proteins, antibiotics, preservatives, and stabilizers. Of these, the most common potential allergen is residual egg protein found in vaccines grown in chick embryo cell cultures, for example, MMR or influenza vaccines. Thus, MMR and influenza virus vaccines are contraindicated in persons with histories of anaphylaxis or immediate reactions. For example, hives, swelling of the mouth and throat, difficulty breathing, hypotension, or shock following egg ingestion. However, there is no evidence that persons with other types of reactions associated with egg ingestion or allergies to chickens or their feathers are at an increased risk for reactions to vaccination. Even egg allergies may not result in contraindication of the use of vaccines grown in chick embryo cell cultures. Only individuals with a history of anaphylaxis or immediate reactions following egg ingestion should avoid these vaccines. In other histories of reactions, including to chicken feathers, increased risk of reaction has not been found. Individuals with suppressed immune function, such as symptomatic HIV, human immunodeficiency virus, or treatment-induced immune suppression, should generally avoid live vaccines, but inactivated vaccines, and a few specific live vaccines, are still recommended for these individuals. Mild acute illness with a low-grade fever and recent exposure to infectious disease are not contraindications for immunization in an otherwise healthy individual. Pregnant women, including pregnant HCP, may have concerns about being immunized during their pregnancy or when breastfeeding, but breastfeeding should not interfere with routine immunization. The only vaccine virus that has been isolated from breast milk is rubella, but there is no evidence that such breast milk is harmful to infants or leads to the transmission of disease. Inactivated vaccines do not appear to pose a risk to the fetus and may be safely administered, where indicated, in the second or third trimester, or any trimester for inactivated influenza vaccine. However, live, attenuated vaccines are contraindicated during pregnancy. Other contraindications are addressed elsewhere. The lack of a sore arm does not imply that immunization has failed to elicit a good antibody response. Sore or red arms should be treated symptomatically with ice packs, elevation, and anti-inflammatory medication as needed. Very large or severe local reactions can indicate that an allergic or arthritis reaction has occurred. Such reactions are best assessed by an allergist or experienced vaccinologist. Understanding and being able to discuss the specifics of these common rationales and conveying accurate information regarding them is a key tool to help increase vaccination.